Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Sims. Michael Sims is the author of four collections of poetry, The Happiness of Animals, Migration, The Fire Eater, and Notes on Continuing Light, as well as co-author with Jack Myers of the Longman Handbook and Dictionary of Poetry. Sims' literary essays and reviews have appeared in a number of periodicals, including the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Pittsburgh Tribune, Southwest Review, and Cafe Review. The editor of over 40 volumes of poetry, Sims is the founder and executive editor of Autumn House Press, a publisher of fine poetry editions. He teaches in the Chatham College MFA program and lives in Mount Washington with his wife, Eva, and their two children, Nicholas and Leah. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Jen. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. You've been on the show before talking about some of your Autumn House books, which we'll get to later, but I'm really excited to have you read some of your own poetry today.
Thank you.
So you're going to start with your newest book, The Happiness of Animals.
Yes. The title poem, The Happiness of Animals, I'd like to start with. It's about a manic depressive episode, if you don't mind. It starts in a depressing place, but if you stay with me, Jan, it gets better. actually ends with some happy lines. The happiness of animals. When the soul sickness takes me and my mind is in an ugly place and I resent other writers their success, I retire to my attic room to look out the octagonal window at the gray street, dead leaves carried by the wind, and I hear a storm coming. And I am no longer the ruler of my invisible kingdom, and incomparable ecstasy is no longer at my beckoning, and the honey of praise for my children is no longer on my lips, and I am not the man I planned to be, nor is this the life I wanted. And my feet have forgotten the music, and my hands have forgotten the smooth arcs. And the gift I once had is a black wand that goads me into self-loathing. And the small cruelties I've practiced seem large, and the large irreparable. And even the innocence of William Blake cannot console me. My son says he's cracked the code. Dad, when you put your head under the pillow, you're dreaming deeply and don't bother you. And when you lie in bed staring at the ceiling, you're working on a poem and don't bother you. And when you lie on your back with your arm across your face, then we especially better not bother you. Then I hear bees and ghosts of bees swarming, and I worry that I've become like Maureen, the mad woman of Mount Washington, pursued by penguins and weasels through the streets, screaming her shrill mantra, spider web, let down your hair, repeated all day, all night, until Ed Shaw, the beat cop, tells her to move on, move on, move on. I pull the shades. I lie down in the dark and listen to the rain. I hear my daughter sitting on the carpet with crayons saying, the heart is two circles and a dot. The heart is two circles and a dot. And I remember Robert Herrick speaking of his lady's spicy nest, the scent of my wife moving from room to room. And I begin to believe the curve is the holiest of inventions. And my daughter asks, Dad, how come all your friends are in AA or else some kind of animal? And I listen to the Goldberg variations until I swear I will never write another poem about an angel dragging a broken wing. From now on, I will praise only the beauty of logarithms, how they are like elegant jewels on a golden chain. And I sing off-key until I realize I've almost figured out the equation of joy. And I write down everything the madwoman says, turning each line this way and that. And I call to my dog Winchester. We walk the forgotten streets in the last of the warm rain. We wade into the waist-high weeds of an abandoned lot, where Winchester, a black lion in a peaceable kingdom, grazes on the daffodil and the dandelion and the asphodel. And I consider the dirt under my shoe, how old it is. Older than arithmetic. Older than spoons and mirrors and scissors. Perhaps as old as the happiness of animals. The happiness of a cow lying in a meadow, chewing her memory of sunlight and grass. Chewing everything twice. Coughing it up. Spitting it out. Like a poet.
Nice poem.
How about a love poem?
That's great.
Not for you, Jan, for my wife.
Okay, that's appropriate.
The marriage bed for Ava. The marriage bed is the center of happiness, a point from which all things ripple outward, a nest from which all things learn to fly. It is the sign of return, part of the great rhythm of the seasons and of the years. It is the dream of return, the strength and faith that sing of home. It is the wren's nest woven of twigs and string, the swallow's nest of saliva and mud. It is what we return to as migratory birds passing over marshes and fields dream of the end of the journey. It is what frightens night devils away, even in winter. It is the tree that grows through the house. It is the hollow of the tree that has never known death. It is the crystal of all feeling, the flower of all understanding, the small containing the large. It is the nautilus growing its many chambers of love. It is the sudden outburst of one who has long been silent. It is the idea that a calla lily can be shaped like a wine glass on a long green stem. It is the heart stone. It is the name of all names that thinks it is a star and a rose. It is a conch shell rough on the outside, pearly in its intimacy. It is a snail rolling over and over, building a staircase. It is an animal, an almond, a repose. It is an oyster opening in the full of the moon. It is a mouth telling a secret. It is a kiln where clay battles fire. It is the simple happiness of sleeping in a boat. These are the walls we've pressed back into a circle in the shape of our merged bodies, and it will take a long time for the waves spreading from the center of our intimacy to reach the ends of the world.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Sims, reading from his new book, The Happiness of Animals. But I love, you know, in that first poem, the title poem of the book, I love how you discuss the small cruelties, the swarming, all that self-torture. You really do a good job of that.
I think we all do that to ourselves, don't we, sometimes?
And, I don't.
The poem is about rising above those feelings. Yeah. And I'm pleased that the poem was able to find that route.
Yeah. Yeah, I find that that happens a lot when I read your work. I feel like, oh, yeah, I can really identify with you with the language you use, and often it's a lot of straight ahead language at times, but it really nails the experience in a way that makes me as a reader say, oh, I know exactly what he's talking about. And I really like that sense of identification that comes with your work.
Thank you, Jan. I think that poets and other writers should write about what we know and what we love, and we should keep in mind what our audience needs. And I believe in that connection between the poet and the reader. I don't believe that solipsistic work is effective or is something that we should try to do. If it happens accidentally, well, you know, we go with the poem. But we really need to think about our audience and connecting with our audience.
Well, how do you know what your audience needs, though? How do you know who your audience is?
Well, I think public readings where you have the audience right in front of you helps a lot. Mm-hmm. Just seeing the expressions in their faces and the kinds of jokes that they laugh at, mm-hmm. and where they are moved and where they're not moved. Mm-hmm. I think through the years, a poet learns what the audience wants.
But if you traveled to, you know, all over the place and the different countries, et cetera, you're really going to get some different responses. And, you know, I think that would get sort of complicated after a while. I mean, and you're really not saying that you want to write to please, right? Or are you?
Well, I want to be loved like everybody.
Sure, sure.
But no, the artist has to rise above that kind of self-gratification. Sure. But nevertheless, I think that it is true that in 20th century poetry, poets left the audience behind. And the price of it was that the audience turned their backs on poetry.
That's true.
So it's part of my mission as a poet, to along with Ted Kooser and Billy Collins and Sonia Sanchez and many others, to recapture that audience, okay, to show people that poetry is relevant to their lives.
Okay. Well, why don't you read more poems?
Okay.
More Michael Sims poems.
Michael Sims poems. I'd like to share three poems about my daughter. These all happened when she was young, 3 or 4 years old. First one is called Munja Munja. Zucchini, tomato, flash beneath the big knife. Chopped onion sizzles. The table is set, a feast for five. Ava's quick fingers pause before the obelisk of eggplant, genuflect before the spice rack. Enter the cathedral of the green pepper. Can truly everything be good? Clinging to us like beanstalks, the children grow toward God. Our garden is always in bloom. Today, Nicholas's teacher sits at our table, hands folded, black curls wild like an angel's. 3-year-old Leah anoints herself, prays. Thanks for food and flowers. I hate mushrooms, and I can't help it. Ghosts of steam rise from the pot. The bread is broken and blessed again by each mouthful. When Leah was 4 years old, I taught her how to swim. That was an important summer for me, and I think for her too. The summer you learn to swim. The summer you learn to swim was the summer I learned to be at peace with myself. In May, you were afraid to put your face in the water. But by August, I was standing in the pool once more when you dove in, then retreated to the wall, saying, "You forgot to say sugar." So I said, "Come on, sugar, you can do it." And you pushed off and swam to me and held on, laughing, your hair stuck to your cheeks. You hiccuped with joy and swam off again. And I dove in too, trying new things. I tried not giving advice. I tried waking early to pray. I tried not rising in anger. Watching you, I grew stronger. Your courage washed away my fear. All day I worked hard thinking of you. In the evening, I walked the long hill home. You were at the top, waving your small arms, pittering down the slope to me, and I lifted you high, so high to the moon. That summer all the world was soul and water, light glancing off peaks. You learned the turtle, the cannonball, the froggy, and the flutter, and I learned to stand and wait for you to swim to me. One more poem about Leah. This poem, again, happened when she was about 4 years old. Names. Leah wants to change her name to Tina. Her mother says she must think very carefully because a name has to fit. The wrong name can bind like someone else's shoes. Who knows where a name has walked? Dust of what roads? Uncomfortable creases across the toe? The heel worn down by someone else's sorrow? Her brother says the name Tina fits. But if she's Tina, what happened to Leah? The name turned down the wrong street, got lost, fell off the edge of the mountain. The sound of her name fills the river valley. Everywhere it is nowhere, he says. Her name needs to come home. Leah doesn't want to be Tina anymore. It's just too much responsibility. How about some more poems?
Okay.
Okay, good.
This is, you're moving to another book, your book entitled Migration.
Yes. This book was published a long time ago when I was a young man. The poems were written when I was in my 20s. And now that I'm in my 30s, right? This was published by a wonderful press named Brighton Bush Books. They did excellent work out of Portland, Oregon. And they published many fine books, including Naomi Shihab Nye's first three books. And they still have her selected poems in print. But the press, for the most part, has gone out of business. Just one of the many casualties in the publishing business. Publishing poetry is just not a profitable enterprise. It's hard to keep them going. This poem is called Evening in the Adirondacks. Always it will be late summer in your mind. Birches give off a full and dark light with a motion you know will abide and return every evening. You are changed by small things. An elm seed spins to earth, and like your talent for the cello, the possibilities remain enclosed. Being ordinary makes you a hero. Sweeping the porch, looking at the sky, you become more than yourself. The solace for being dull is being perfectly at ease with the world. All afternoon, the afternoon sails in and out the window, and the first star starts the lake singing. The inner ear. In the silence of my room, I hear a faucet dripping, a fly beating, green wings against the window. 2,000 miles from here, fishing boats return up an estuary, past houses scattered like dice. You and your husband are sitting on a black rock, quietly discussing an unquiet divorce. The mailman drops my letter in the slot, snapping the tight wire a spider made this morning. Somewhere in Nepal, a snowflake lands on a mountaintop, and the whole mountain prepares to fall.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Sims, reading his work. Michael, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Autumn House Press. Even though you have these four collections of poetry, which are wonderful, you've decided over the last years to sort of take a turn and to start publishing poetry rather than focusing on your own work as your primary goal. And that's a pretty big shift. And I wonder if you could talk about that shift and then tell us a little bit about Autumn House Press.
Thank you, Jen. 8 years ago, my wife and I decided to start a publishing company. We chose the name Autumn House, and we established it as a nonprofit corporation. We were fortunate. We had a little bit of money we had saved and were willing to invest in Autumn House Press, donate to the press, and I started working on the press. I wanted the press to grow, but I had no idea that it would grow as much as it has. We've won national awards for some of the books. We've published individual collections as well as anthologies. We just hired a new executive director, Richard St. John, who's a wonderful, absolutely great nonprofit administrator and a fine poet in his own right. And the press has really taken off, and we're excited by that. I had to make a decision fairly early after I started Autumn House what my life's work was. I'd been a poet for some time, and I tried writing novels and short stories and plays and worked in television. But I felt that lyric poetry, as much as I love it, was not enough for me, that I love poetry and wanted to be part of the poetry field. But I had business skills. I know something about marketing, something about sales, something about accounting, something about building a business, because I've built several businesses through my life. So I needed that. I needed a way to practice those other skills, and I wanted to use them in service to poetry. So Autumn House was the right canvas for me there. And many of my friends, including you, Jan, have urged me to continue with my writing. And I really appreciate that support. But my important work, I believe, is in building Autumn House and in publishing beautiful books. And I feel like I I feel I can serve poetry much better as an editor, as a publisher, than I can as a poet. There are lots of good poets. Autumn House received 700 manuscripts last year. Easily 100 of those were publishable, and 15 or 20 of them were extraordinary. But we could publish only 6. So that means there are some extraordinary manuscripts out there that have not found publishers. And what about those other 80 books that are very good and deserve to be published? So Autumn House is serving a need. And since I know something about marketing and about building a business, I can serve poetry in a way that I couldn't as a poet.
Okay. Well, would you read some of the Autumn House poems then?
Sure, I'd love to. Our latest publication is called Joyful Noise, an anthology of American spiritual poetry. This is a remarkable edition edited by Robert Strong, who's a professor at SUNY in New York. And the volume starts with ancient songs from Native Americans, the Inuit, Ojibwa, Hopi, Osage, Pawnee, Sioux, and others, and moves into the colonial poets and then the traditional Protestant songs and verses, moves into the transcendentalists like Ralph Waldo Emerson, moves up to Mark Twain and Walt Whitman, and then the last third of the book is contemporary poets like Gerald Stern and Alan Dugan and Mark Jarman and many others, Jane Hirschfield, Kazim Ali, Catherine Ming, many others. So I love this book. It gives a good overview of the development of American spirituality through its poetry. Here's a short poem from the Pawnee, a traditional song. Let us see, is this real, this life I am living? You holy ones who dwell everywhere, let us see, is this real, this life I am living? I am like a bear. I hold up my hands, waiting for the sun to rise. Here's a poem included there by Walt Whitman. I'm sure many people who are listening now have heard this poem before, but it's always worth repeating. It's called A Noiseless Patient Spider. A noiseless patient spider. I marked where on a little promontory it stood isolated, marked how to explore the vacant, vast surrounding. It launched forth filament, 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 out of itself, ever unreeling them, ever tirelessly speeding them. And you, O my soul, where you stand, surrounded, detached, in measureless oceans of space, ceaselessly musing, venturing, throwing, seeking the spheres to connect them, till the bridge you will need be formed, till the ductile anchor hold, till the gossamer thread you fling catch somewhere, O my soul. Autumn House publishes a lot of different books. Some of our other books include our contest winner last year, No Sweeter Fat by Nancy Pagg, and The Golden Hour by Sue Ellen Thompson, and Woman in the Painting by Andrea Hollander Buddy. I'd like to share a poem by Nancy Pagg. It's called, I Believe I Could Kneel. I believe I could kneel in so many quiet places where the pale sponge of moss would surely reach above my hips as I sank down and down, as the deer must in their beds, kneeling once, then once again, to lower themselves front and back before closing their glistening eyes. I think I'm the kind of person down on one knee and shifting my weight my whole life long, but capable of sinking far and deep to the bottom of something that might replace the religion I discarded or make me really live in this body or waste my life. I would like to live my way into being someone who stands back up and runs toward that holy forest. One of my favorite poets is Sue Ellen Thompson, who currently lives in Maryland, but she lived in Mystic, Connecticut for 30 years. I love that name, Mystic, Connecticut. We published The Golden Hour by Sue Ellen Thompson a few months ago, and I love this book. It's largely about the final weeks of her mother's life. And strangely enough, given the subject matter, it is a book about happiness. Here's the first poem in that volume. In Praise of Cancer. In Praise of Cancer, for giving her those first 6 weeks of summer, doing crosswords on the porch in a kimono worn so thin the morning light and birdsong could move through it, for drowsy afternoons in chemo reading magazines, and for the nurses who could slip a needle underneath the paper of her skin as easily as a lover's name into a conversation, for allowing us to see her as a girl again, a string bean, then a downy-headed infant curling in upon herself for sleep, and finally as something luminous, desiring, for sending us the unseasonable snow that dawdled in the autumn foliage the day we drove through the white mountains past Robert Frost's house, pausing long enough for her to say, "And that has made all the difference." For the afternoon I brought her home exhausted from the hospital and laid her down to nap on that same porch, the screens dissolving now in late October's radiance, and for the sleep she sank into so gratefully, a smile shone like water on her thin, dry lips, for taking what it had to take so casually at first, an appetite for olives, windfall hair, for being quick and greedy at the end.
We're out of time, Michael, but thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
The poetry of Michael Sims and poems from Autumn House Writers. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.
She had a smile that swerved, she had a smile that curved, she had a smile that swerved all over the world. It's all wrong.